Welcome, everyone, here to our January group coaching call here for Platinum members. It's great to be here. I believe we have a couple of new Platinum members this month, so welcome. And as usual, we're going to go ahead and get started with some questions that were submitted and that I've seen around or I've been asked recently. But before I forget, I want to let you know how you can ask a question. We have an open forum here. But the way we do this, just to minimize background noise, is as you're coming into the call, everyone is muted. So if you have a question, it's very simple. Simply raise your hand by dialing *2 on your telephone keypad. That will notify me that that you'd like to ask your question, and I'll go ahead and unmute you, and we can have some dialogue. If you are on the webcast, you prefer to just type in your question, that's fine. On the page you're on right now, you should be able to just type it in, hit submit. I'll see it over here, read it, and address it. So whatever you're most comfortable with is fine. *2, again, will raise your hand, and you can ask away. So a couple of questions. First, one is anonymous. And this person was asking about just finding time to do general marketing of her freelance business. She said, "I'm finding it challenging to make time to write my newsletter and work on marketing my business. Any tips or ideas on how to find the time to get this done when you have a ton of client work?" It's a problem that never really goes away, unfortunately, right? It's the, gosh, you know what, how do you balance the billable work with marketing and some of the other tasks that, you know, we just have to take care of? Unfortunately, we wear all the hats. So unless you have somebody helping you with some of the functions, which I think there's definitely value in, you have to make sure that you have some sort of balance. Otherwise, you could find yourself having, you know, your pipeline drying up and having little work once the good times end, once your clients wrap up their work with you. So the first thing I would say is you'll never find the time. You have to make the time. And one of the things that I've discovered over the past few years, I know this sounds overly simplistic, but my goodness, just no matter how many times I try to find other things, I always keep coming back to this because it works time and time again. And that is treating it like a client project or thinking of it like a doctor's appointment or something that you would never just kind of blow off. I think it's really interesting that the things in my life that get done are things that are scheduled, things that I just cannot say no to, or there's somebody else involved and I can't just at the last minute because I feel I'm too busy or I'm behind, I can just kind of forget about. I'll give you an example. Just this morning, I had only about 2.5 hours to work on some projects. I got quite a few projects on the go, and it's always a struggle for me to find the time because the afternoons I usually have calls like these. I have some one-on-one calls with folks in my 2X project coaching program, and I have all kinds of things happening in the afternoon. So really, the time for me to work on creative projects is the morning. But lately, I've been starting a new habit. It's not a new habit. It's an old habit that I had kind of let go of, is to have physical activity starting at either 11 or 11:30, depending on what I'm going to do. And I had 11 o'clock today out for a long walk, and I scheduled it in. And two things happen that force me to stay on track and to make sure that first of all, the walk happened, and second of all, that my project work this morning was very focused. The fact that I scheduled in my exercise, I had that call, the walk scheduled from 11 to noon, and something interesting that happened that made me actually put my running shoes on or my walking shoes on at 10:55 and make sure I was out the door at 11, instead of just saying, "Oh, well, you know, it can wait, let me just wrap this up," is the fact that I also scheduled a call with a colleague at 11 o'clock. And I told him, I said, "Look, I'm going to be on a walk. Let's just have the conversation while I'm on a walk. Is that okay with you?" And he said, "No problem." So it was interesting, just adding that little bit to it forced me to get out the door. I didn't want to take the call a little bit before or be late for the call. So by doing both, it happened, and by scheduling at 11, it happened. Second, because I suddenly created a constraint where I had to my 6-year-old was out the door for school at 8:30, and I usually get him ready, get him fed, make his lunch and all that. And my wife takes him to school. Sometimes I take him to school. But at any rate, he was out the door at 8:30. So I had 2.5 hours to get this done. And because I had that hard stop, I was extremely focused. So my point here is create constraints. You know, block that time and treat it like you would a doctor's appointment. And just like, you know, I couldn't be late for my call with my colleague, I just make sure that at 11 o'clock, that's when you're going to start working on your newsletter or whatever time it is. It reminds me of the big rocks concept that Stephen Covey used to present, where he said, look, if you wait for time for things to happen, they're just not going to happen. And he used the metaphor, and he actually had a whole display of this. If you try to fit in the sand and then the pebbles and then the big rocks in a fishbowl, there's not going to be enough room for the big rocks, and the big rocks are the important things in our lives. But then he would demonstrate how if you put the big rocks first and then you sprinkle in the pebbles and then you sprinkle in the sand, the pebbles and the sand kind of work their way through the crevices between the big rocks. It's such a powerful metaphor, and I found the same thing here. It's the marketing time is not going to make itself. You're going to have to schedule it. I know that sounds boring. It sounds overly simplistic. But time and time again, I keep coming back to this because it works. And when you build in those constraints, not only does your marketing get done, but then you're forced to become much more efficient and focused with the time that's left. So give it a try. I think if you give this approach a try for just 1 week, you're going to be surprised. If you haven't done this before, how effective it is. You may not get 100% of the things done, but you'll get many times more done than what you typically do in a regular week. All right. Second question, and then we'll go to, again, well, you can hit star two anytime if you want to ask a question. They'll raise your hand, star two. This question had come in from Betsy. How much time do you spend with clients before they hire you? Do you play it by ear or have a firm process you follow? I'm working to streamline my process so it's more predictable, and I'd love to know what's working for you. So I don't really have a I haven't really tracked how much total time I spend with a prospect before they hire me, but here's how I approach it. I think of it in terms of how do I want this to go down? So whether it's an inquiry that came in or I'm doing outreach, so I'm knocking on doors and doing prospecting, what's the typical process that I want? I needed a process because I want to make sure I know how to lead prospects in the right way that's going to be the most efficient way to get most of them, the right ones, to convert to clients. And what I found was that it became a lot easier once I realized that everything needs to be based on having a discovery call with a client. I like to call it the discovery call. And it's a physical call. I mean, we're on the phone or on Skype. It's not email, but we're having a conversation. So that gave me a point of reference. All right, so any inquiry, if it's going to have a chance of turning into a client or any outreach or up on marketing or warm email that I send out, it all needs to eventually lead to a discovery call. And I pitch the discovery call as a 30-minute conversation. I get to learn more about the project, what they're looking for, and we get to see if we have a good fit. So we're not looking to make decisions there. I don't sell it as a sales pitch or as a sales call. I sell it as a way for us to learn more about each other and to see if we have the basis for more conversation. So That said, we're looking at a 30-minute call. Now, in order to get a prospect to that, it might take some back and forth, but it's really hard for me to measure that in terms of how much time. It might be a couple of emails. And then after that, if it's a go, so if we both feel that there could be a fit, then it's just a matter of how long does it take me to put a fee agreement together, a quote, or whatever I'm going to send them. And I've tried to streamline that, so it's really not a long time. But I don't want to go through that process unless I've qualified the prospect and I am confident and they're confident that we have a reason to take it to that next step. Now, just doing this alone will save you an incredible amount of time and heartache, is having that discovery call. And on that discovery call, and I'm going to be putting an execution plan for this sometime in the next few months. So just know that that's coming. That's in the schedule. But you're really trying to find out five things. And the first thing I like to start with is an easy question, which is I call source. And that is the source of the lead. So unless I was the one contacting them, in that case, I'm going to know how they found out about me because I'm the one who made the outreach. But if they came to me, then the first question I ask the prospect is, how did you find out about me? And I just want to know for two reasons. First, for tracking purposes. I like to keep track of how people find out about me because over time I can develop patterns and see, okay, well, people who find me on LinkedIn, those tend to be good prospects. Or maybe you find the opposite is true. Those tend to not be good prospects. And then the second reason is just it's an easy question to ask and to kind of break the ice, right, before you start getting into deeper, more direct questions. So after that, I have questions around what I call need or pain or challenge. I'm just basically asking them, so what are you looking for? Or what are you looking to do? Or just trying to get a sense for what's their project. What do they have in mind? Why do they come to me with? Then I ask one or two questions around the decision-making process, and I call it decision-making questions, but it's really I'm trying to determine how they're going about this. And in many cases, I'm also asking if they've worked with a outside blank before, so an outside writer, an outside copywriter, an outside designer, whatever it might be. I'm just trying to get a sense for, all right, so how are you going about this? Have you done this before? Essentially, I'm trying to decide, is this a savvy client? Do they seem to know what they're doing? Are their expectations going to be out of whack? Are they going to be probably well aligned with others? And just asking a couple of questions about how they're going about this really helps me see that. Then I ask a very simple question about timing. So this is my timing question. My timing question is, when are you looking to go live, or when are you looking to get this done? When are you looking to have a draft published, or whatever it might be? So that's a timing question. And then and only then do I ask about money. I think it's extremely important to talk money in this discovery call, but I don't want to talk about money until we have the context for that budget discussion. And my question is very simple. What kind of budget are you working with? I ask that question exactly like that. What kind of budget are you working with? And it's a very simple process. About half people, maybe 40%, will go ahead and give me some sort of information there. A little bit more than half won't. And if they don't, then that's fine. Then I'll go ahead. Typically, they throw it back at me and they say, well, we don't know. What would you typically charge for this? Or what do you charge? What are your fees? What's your rate? And that's when I'll go ahead and give them a range based on what they've shared with me so far. And it's going to be a fixed fee range typically, and I'll explain based on what they've shared with me for something like this, we're looking at somewhere between $2,000 and $3,000. It depends on A, B, and C. And then I throw it back at them and say, does that fit within your budget or is that within your budget? So they threw the hot potato back at me. I give them what they wanted, give them some information. I'm throwing the hot potato back at them. And in many cases, they're going to go ahead and give me some indication because at that point, it's very hard for them not to answer that. So that's what my discovery call is like. That's what the process in a nutshell entails. And we limit it to 20, 30 minutes. In fact, that's what I asked the prospect for. It's a 20. I'd like to ask for 20 minutes because I can do this in 20 minutes. Now, the prospect wants to open up and share more with me, and you know they want to keep talking. That's fine. I can allow up to about 30 minutes. What I don't get into is, you know, these consulting calls where they just want to pick my brain. I think if you set a time for it, 20 minutes, it gives you a reason to kind of start getting out of it. And if you're leading the call, that's the other important aspect of this process, then you're the one in control and you're the one leading the prospect, and the chances of it kind of going off the rails is much, much lower. So, but really I'm looking at about 30 minutes with some time before and some time after, but only after if we both find that it would make sense to proceed with a quote or a proposal or a fee agreement, something along those lines. And at that point, if we both agreed on it, then I have a higher probability prospect to begin with, so I don't mind spending a little bit more time. What I try to control is the time I spend with people before the discovery call or during the discovery call, because that's where a lot of waste can happen. So hopefully that helps you, Betsy, and others who might be wondering the same thing. It's a great question. All right, so guys, star two, if you have a question, you want to raise your hand. It's an open floor right now. No raised hands yet. Always hard to break the ice. here we go. Donna, I believe this is Donna. Donna, is that you? Oh, maybe not. All right, I got a caller in New York, 516 area code. You're on. Hello.
Hello, hello.
Hey, you're on.
Okay, this is Michael Scully. Donna's my wife's name. The phone's in her name, apparently.
Oh, yeah, okay, sorry. How are you, Michael?
Good, how are you?
Good, man.
I'm recently freed from my employer, so I'm free to work on this full time. And I apologize up front if this question has been answered before. I haven't actually had time to go through past calls, so I apologize if I'm repeating anything.
Hey, but you alluded to no problem. I want repeat questions because if you're asking it, others have it, so don't worry.
All right. Well, you kind of started to allude to this with the last question in your preparation. You talk about how much you want to get a proposal turned around quickly to a prospect that looks promising that you just met with. Typically, what's your turnaround time for those sorts of things? Once you've had the discovery call and you're going to do a proposal, how fast do you want to get to that to them, and what exactly is the form it takes? Is it a PDF, or is it just an email, or what?
I tend to go with a PDF. I keep it very simple, and I like to turn it around within one business day. So right. I'll just let them know. But it depends. I mean, if we're talking, let's say, at 5:30 one afternoon, I still like to get it to them by end of business the next day,
okay.
Unless something's happening. Like, let's say it's – obviously, if it's Saturday, then it's going to be Monday. Or unless the timing is such that we don't have all the information, so they owe me something, or there's really no big hurry, like they tell me, look, I'm going to be out on vacation next week, just, you know, no hurry, that kind of thing. But otherwise, everything else being equal, one business day.
All right, cool. Thanks.
Yeah. And by the way, I like a very simple approach. I find that many prospects say, when can you give me a proposal? So they'll use the word proposal, but 90% of the time, they don't actually want what we would consider a proposal. Like a full-blown 20-page proposal. What they really are asking for is a quote, you know, but many people get into the habit of using the word proposal. And I think for what many of us do in this group, we got writers, designers, copywriters, translators, you know, we have a few consultants, but really what we're we have tangible deliverables along with our engagement. And in most cases, you should be able to get away with some sort of quote or fee agreement, not a full-blown proposal. Therefore, you know, it's something you should be able to turn around quickly. The only parts I customize are, of course, the scope of work, and then things like the objective. I like to ask questions about, you know, what are you trying to do? What are you trying to accomplish? And I include that language in my fee agreement, say, you know, I'm giving you, this is for a white paper on this topic. The objective is to get prospects to see this or that or the other. Right, so I'm using their language there. So we're talking about only a few places in my fee agreement template that will change. Therefore, I can turn it around fairly quickly.
Sounds good.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, thanks.
Sure. Good to talk to you. It's been a while.
Yeah, it has.
So welcome.
Thank you.
All right, so again, star two, if you have a question. Hey, Don, you're on. It's been so long. How you been?
Yeah, been a long time, hasn't it? About an hour and a half.
Yeah, Don was in a call that I had scheduled for a little bit earlier, so we've actually talked this afternoon.
Okay, last caller raised a question that I've had, and that is, when you send documents to the client, do you usually send PDF, for instance, project proposal and terms of agreement, things like that, invoices and whatnot, or do you send them Word or just the document that you're working on? In other words, your deliverable is sent in Word.
Okay, yeah, and I'm glad you asked, because Michael did ask about that too, and so I work in Microsoft Word, so my kind of template is there, my fee agreement template, but then I convert it to a PDF before I send it. So in terms of format, it's going to be a PDF. In terms of what elements are there, I include the terms and conditions for working with me, which are standard for everybody, for all my clients, and then a section for scope of work. It just details, here's what I'm going to give you, here are the deliverables, here's what the project includes, here's what it doesn't include, start date, deadline for first draft, you know, so those kinds of elements, everything about the scope of work that I think is relevant. And then the third section will be compensation. So here's the fee, here are the terms, payment terms, that kind of thing.
Okay, so that you send in PDF.
Exactly. So I'll edit in Word, and then I'll just convert it. I'll save it, and then I'll convert it to PDF and email it to him or her.
Right. Well, Word allows you to, well, when you save in what I use, you can save it as a Word document or as a PDF. I usually save it as Word and then save it as PDF. But then what I've been doing is I've been sending at least the invoice and project proposal, scope of work, whatever, in a PDF as well. And that way they can't be changed.
Yes.
Word documents, if they're using Word anyway, they can change it and say, well, this is what I agreed to. No, it isn't. There's PDF. So
exactly. And that's why I like to use PDF. So I do exactly what you do. Save it as a Word document, and then save it also as a PDF, but then send them the PDF version.
Okay. Very good. Very good. Thank you very much. Have a great rest
welcome.
Of the day.
Oh, you too, Don.
I have to. A little bit. I've got an appointment at 2:30, so.
Oh, okay. Good. Well, you snuck this one in just in time then.
Yes, I did. Thank you.
All right. You're welcome. All right. So again, star two if you have a question. And let's see. Kimberly submitted a question through the webcast, through the chat. She says, a lot of people I've talked with recently have said they're very interested in working on a project, but getting them to settle on one is a long process. or I never get that finalized. Any advice on how to speed up that process, or maybe a follow-up sequence to follow that you can follow to get them thinking of a project but not being a bother? Okay. Yeah, great question. So first thing I would say is, you know, at the end of the day, you can't create the demand. They're going to have that demand, and it's got to be urgent enough on their plate in order to be motivated to move forward. So there are businesses and industries where, you know, you can kind of build that kind of urgency. But I find that with most creative work, it just becomes a real hassle if you're the one having to kind of artificially create that that motivation or create some sort of scarcity. It doesn't work very well. So they have to be motivated, intrinsically motivated to move forward. So that's the biggest thing. It's just something to keep in mind. And many times, Kimberly, that's just a function of the type of prospect they are. If you're finding that a lot of your prospects, that's kind of the reaction, or that's kind of where they are, where they're just, you got to keep pumping them up and following up, then maybe, not for sure, but maybe it's a function of the prospects you're going after. Now, it's still very common for prospects to just, you know, suddenly they're like in a big hurry for, I need a quote on this because we got to get moving. And you hurry and you get it to them instead of the next business day, that same day, and you don't hear anything and you follow up like you should, and nothing and nothing and nothing. And suddenly 3 weeks later, they finally respond and she says, well, you know, it's actually been put on hold. Sorry. So that's common too, you know, and it could be, in that case, it probably is the right prospect. It's just, you know, marketing managers and marketing directors are pulled in many different directions, and suddenly, you know, what was the top item on their list goes down because their boss's boss now has them working on something else. So they have this initiative that they need to roll out, and they need, you know, suddenly that takes up all their time. So based on that, I think your second part of your question is really kind of where the answer is you can't speed up the process, but how can you follow up with a project without being a bother? So once it's out there, I like to follow up. It depends. I can't give you an exact formula because it depends on what kind of response I'm getting. If I'm getting no response, then I'll follow up about five or six times over the course of maybe 3 or 4 weeks. But most cases, I am getting some response usually in that time frame. So if I'm getting a response and I kind of back off because they've told me something, oh, yeah, sorry, you know, we're still very interested, it's just, you know, this is happening. So obviously, I'm not going to follow up with them 3 days later if they've given me some information. But if that's the case and it's kind of like, we don't know yet, it's still something we want to do, but, you know, this or that, and they give you some excuses, then take that information and build up kind of an informal follow-up sequence based on that. So let's say that they say, look, it's going to be at least another month. You know, my boss is traveling and she really needs to sit down with us, and we need that, you know, so we could have the project kickoff call and get the information for the outline and what we want to do. And all right, so you know she's out. It's going to be at least a month, and so you don't want to follow up anytime before that. But what I might do in a scenario like that is a few days after that month is go ahead and schedule a tickler, a reminder in my system or in my calendar to follow up with Jim in about, you know, see if we can schedule some time, see if his boss is back, and we can schedule that kickoff call, right? So something like that. But if it's kind of like they're not giving me a time frame, they just know, look, we are going to do this. I can't tell you exactly when, but, you know, feel free to stay in touch with me. Then what I do is I like to alternate between sending something that could be useful to them in the way of information, also potentially sending them my newsletter, which is a nice way to keep my name top of mind, and following up on the actual thing. So I like to kind of like switch it around a bit. So in, if I just followed up today and they can't really give me a straight answer, to, then using those three things I just mentioned, my next follow-up might be in 30 days, and it might be some useful information. Hey, I came across, you know, this blog post on outlining ebooks and why ebooks make great lead magnets for, you know, companies in your industry. So I thought you might find it interesting. Hope you're doing well. Right, something like that. 30 days after that, I might send my newsletter. You know, I know that they're going to be taken care of. They're going to get my newsletter, for instance, the following month. And this is why a newsletter is great. Many times it's not like the actual content inside of it. It's the fact that you can stay top of mind in their inbox. And then 30 days after that, I might just follow up on the project just directly. Hey, Jim, it's been a while. Hope you're doing well. Hey, are you guys, is this still, you know, an item? Is this something you guys are looking to do? Just checking up on that. And that is, I feel a lot more professional and different from what most other people would do, which is, you know, the are you ready now? Are you ready now? Are you ready now? Type of thing. So, Kimberly, I'm not sure that helps, but I think the bottom line is it's very, very hard to create that motivation and to get them to move on something when they're not ready. If they don't have that intrinsically, it's going to be very, very hard in this business. There are other businesses where you could say, well, you know, this deal, this 50% off deal ends tomorrow. You know, so I know the timing may not be perfect, but you may want to take advantage of that. In other businesses, that works, but with this, that approach doesn't really work well. Okay, so and I see that you got your hand raised. Hey, you're on. Was that helpful? Is that what kind of the scenarios you're facing?
Hi, Ed. Can you hear me?
Yeah. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. It's more a matter of I think I'm waiting for them to get approval from other people. You know, they talk with me and they're like, oh yeah, I really, really want to work with you. You seem to know what you're talking about. This is super exciting, but I need to speak with some people. And then it's a matter of I follow up. I don't really hear back or, yeah, something like that.
Yeah. So then it still applies. It's the, you know, just stay top of mind by alternating. Instead of just making all your follow-ups are about, did you get approval, did you get approval, did you get approval, it's one out of three is about, did you get approval? You right. See what I'm saying?
Right, right. Anyway, I wanted to give everyone an update. Last month I asked about how to follow up around the holiday time, and you were talking about, you know, doing a big push and contacting a lot of companies, and you wanted to hear how I did with that. So,
yeah.
I contacted about 30 companies the week before Christmas, and I got about a 35% response rate, which was very nice.
Wow.
yeah, I was a little surprised by that, actually. In fact, somebody even responded to me on Christmas Day. That one was really a shock. But I got onto three separate phone calls, and now as this is what it relates to. I'm actually just waiting to hear back from them about starting a project. And I also followed up with all of the outstanding prospects that either I hadn't heard from in months or we had talked about setting something up and never got around to it. And I think 90% of them at least emailed me back and said yes or no. Most of them it was no, or most of them it was, well, right now we're still thinking about how we're going to expand and we'll get back to you. We still got you in mind, but at the moment we don't have anything for you, which kind of goes back to your 3% of businesses are actively looking and everybody else is just thinking about it. But yeah, so it was definitely very successful. I got three or four different phone calls with different companies, and hopefully those will soon result in actual projects and we can go forward from there. But
that's awesome. That is, yeah, congratulations, Kimberly, on making that happen. It's one thing to say, yeah, it sounds like a good idea. It's another to go ahead and do this kind of work right before the holidays? Because usually most of us kind of are in, you know, shutdown mode.
Yeah, I did. I use a tracking software to find out if people are actually opening my emails. And I had almost a 100% response open. So almost everybody at least opened my email to read it. Probably because, as you say, everyone was in shutdown mode and they didn't have anything else to do. And, oh, here's something in my inbox. I'll open it.
What do you use to track that?
I use HubSpot's free sidekick.
Yes.
So a little information for everyone out there. You can HubSpot has a CRM, and it's free up to a certain amount of contacts, and then as part of that, they have a tracking software built into it, which I think it adds like an unobtrusive image or something that most people won't see in the email at the very bottom. You can find out when people open it, and you can find out if people are opening something a lot. You only get 200 tracks per month with the free version, and that it includes every time you open it, which is frustrating. And if they open like an email 10 times, or they forward it to somebody and that person opens it 3 times or whatever, that counts towards your 200. But I have found that after 200, you can't look at the tracks for the rest of the month, but you still get the notifications on your desktop when someone opens something. So if you're online at the time someone opens it, you will get the notification that they've opened it. You just can't go back and see, like, when they opened it or who opened it. You will get notifications.
Oh, that's very valuable. So HubSpot Sidekick. They used to be their own app. HubSpot acquired them. If you just Google HubSpot, one word, Sidekick, one word, so two different words, HubSpot Sidekick, you'll find it.
Yeah, I think they actually just renamed it. I'm not sure what it's called now, but as far as I know, it's still free, and I use HubSpot CRM as well, and that's still free. I have about a couple hundred contacts in there right now. They have something called the Forever Free Plan, so it's always going to be free forever up to a certain number, essentially, and it's very useful because I at least know somebody's opened the email as opposed to, gee, did anyone actually read that warm email that I spent an hour working on?
Yeah. Well, it's that's good to know, and it's good to know that you like their CRM system as well. I've had great feedback on that one. I've never personally used it, but everyone I've talked to really likes it. And free is good, right?
Yeah, free is good. But it, like as you were saying about setting yourself a notification, that's one thing I really like about it is that it will email you, like you set the notification, oh, I need to remember to contact this person in 2 weeks. And then you'll get an email in your inbox at the time and day that you said. And it's just a reminder, and then it's got your note in there. So you just kind of remember, like, I can basically just forget about whatever I'm supposed to do, and then it tells me when I do something.
Great. Great. And, of course, you had a 35% response rate on that on those emails. You got a couple conversations, but I'm assuming you're still kind of following up with or will follow up with some of the other ones, right?
Yeah. It's been the first 2 weeks have passed, and I forwarded on those messages, and quite a few of them, the forwards got open, but still nothing from those yet. But, you know, I will add them to my nurturing pile now.
Excellent. Well, hey, congratulations. Great effort. And goes to show, guys, emailing and prospecting when prospects don't really expect it, when they're not getting that kind of volume, it's worth at least experimenting with that approach. And you don't have to wait until, you know, this December to try this. If you think about it on a micro level, like, how could you use this now, that approach? Well, what about Friday afternoons? You know, what about experimenting with maybe sending a few emails out on a weekend? You know, those kinds of things. What you're trying to do is you're trying to get their attention when maybe their inbox is not seeing as much activity, or maybe when they're paying a little bit more attention because it's a little bit quieter. So great, great lesson. And thanks for the feedback. That's great to know.
Yes, thank you.
fantastic. I've heard similar results from others in other groups and some of my coaching groups. So that's fantastic. Some have led to clients. And by the way, this approach can also work well. The lesson there was two things. There was timing, and there was the other is dormant leads or past clients or dead leads. There's value in going back and following up with old leads like Kimberly did as well, people who've contacted her before, but for some reason the timing wasn't right. Maybe they kind of fell off your radar screen. They slipped through the cracks, and, you know, it. Don't worry about, oh, but it's going to be awkward because I was 8 months ago and I haven't followed up with them. You know, you never know. I learned this lesson my last job when I started in 2001, software sales, they had this product. Somebody had been selling it. They kind of dropped it, but they had left me the biggest gift. Hundreds and hundreds of leads. These are people who had contacted my employer asking about the software, and the guy who I replaced had only followed with all of those leads one time. And if they didn't respond or they weren't interested or whatever, he dropped it. So, and the good news is he had documented all of this. So we're talking about, let's say it was 500 companies, and I had records of all of them and then all the activity. And most of them, the only activity was his one follow-up he did. So you can imagine I get there, and I have no one to call on. There were no existing, no new leads. So you said, all right, make it happen. And after thinking about it for a while, I realized, well, let me go ahead and just let me look at the database, the CRM system. Let me follow up with whoever maybe has inquired but never really got followed up with. And that's exactly what I did. I spent about 2-3 weeks. All I did day in and day out was picking up the phone. In my mind, I wasn't cold calling because they had approached us before. And I said, so you know, this is Ed Gandia with ConstructWare, and I noticed that you guys had inquired about our project management software. And I didn't say when. I just said recently. But from what I can tell, no one really followed up with you. And I was calling to see if maybe we can reengage, send you some new information, or maybe tell you a little bit about what we have. In that simple, primitive approach landed me several customers in those first 3 weeks. And my boss thought I was like this magician. And I mean, they just couldn't believe it. Like, I mean, we're going to give you 3 months to make your first sale. We didn't, and here I was making sales just from that very simple approach. So I learned that lesson then, and it's never escaped me. You can always go back to people who've contacted you before, people who you've contacted, but say, yeah, maybe sometimes we work with outside writers. Let me keep your information handy. The timing's not good now. We don't really have anything. Go back. It doesn't matter how long it's been. You have an excuse. You can always say, we touched base. We talked a few months ago. We didn't have anything then. I'm curious to see if you have anything upcoming where I may be able to help you. You know, that simple approach, you'd be surprised. You start turning stones and never know what you'll uncover. All right, guys. So, again, star two. If you have a question, want to raise your hand. All right. Robin. Hey, Robin. How are you?
Good, Ed. And you?
Doing well. Good to talk to you.
Same here. Okay, so I have a couple of questions. I'm having the opposite effect that Kimberly was having. I sent out a bunch of emails the week of Christmas and the week of New Year, and I've gotten absolutely no response.
Oh.
Yeah,
okay.
That hurts. So I've also since published my first article about the boat show, and I sent a separate email out to the four companies that I featured in there, and I know two of them opened the email. and two of them did not. And I actually sent one to them, the marketing person as well, and she deleted my email without even reading it. So I don't know what's up with that. But one of them that I had featured, he was one of the same companies that I had been talking to at the boat show and then talked to afterwards, and we had done a discovery and the whole bit, and they were supposed to send me a press release, and they wanted me to take a look at it to see if it needed to be redone and all that, and they have gone totally cold on me. I've not heard from them. They've not answered any of my emails for anything I've sent them. I've even sent them an email and said, hey, this is a software I thought you could use, because they were looking at doing something with imaging. So, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've sent, also sent, the week of, right after New Year's, I sent out like 94 New Year's cards as well.
Okay.
And I had two people respond to that and called me and thanked me for the card. But that's it. So, two questions. How long should I wait now before I contact anybody again? And I'm going on vacation the end of February in just like 32 days from now. And I wanted to send a vacation email to see if I could get somebody to do something quick in a hurry. But it would go to the same people.
So I love the vacation email. It's just, it's never failed me. And I mean, it's not that it's foolproof. It's not going to work every time, but it can be very effective if you're honest about it. The time to send that is now. And for those of you who wonder what I'm talking about, it's very simple. What you're doing is, if you know you're going on vacation, typically you want to do 60 days out, 60 days before you're leaving. You want to contact current and old clients and even prospects that you've been in touch with, but again, the timing wasn't right. And just, I like to email them individually, but you can send this out as a broadcast. And just say, I am going on vacation, first 2 weeks of February. I want to let you know, because if you have anything in the works, something you've been thinking about starting, I have bandwidth now. So you might be able to start something, but, you know, I'm going to be out. I'm going to be off the grid for a couple of weeks in February and then kind of catching up. And that, it's surprising how many people just kind of wakes up, oh, well, you know what, we have something that we could work with you on. So 60 days would have been hard because that was around the holidays, but I would send that out now,
right,
Robin?
And so the only group I have is the same ones that I've just sent up all the cards and emails.
Okay.
So it's going to be less than 30 days that I sent it, but so that would be okay?
Yeah, just send it. You have nothing to lose.
Okay.
You have nothing to lose. My first group is usually, by the time I started sending this, I had enough clients, whether they were current or past clients, that let's say it was 10. Just by sending it to those 10, I mean, it was crazy what it created. But if you don't have too many clients yet, you can send it to the one or two clients you do have, and then send the rest can be prospects, and that's fine.
Yeah, because I have like about 100 people on my list.
Okay, perfect. The other thing I would do is change your email signature, if you have one that you automatically send with every email, to indicate like in red or some color that stands out. Notice, vacation notice. I will be, you know, out of pocket on vacation from February 1st to February 17th. You know, if you have something you need to start before then, let me know. Something along those lines.
Okay.
Email signature is a great thing. You could do it there as a signature or as an auto P, like a PS, right? Which, so it's still part of your signature, but, you know, like a couple of line breaks and then a PS. That is great real estate that a lot of people don't myself included, I don't take advantage of it enough.
All right, so do that on the regular?
All your email, yeah.
Signature or that one, and because I have a separate one for like warm emails, so do it on both.
Oh, yeah, if it's a warm email, that's different because the warm email, that's focused on the call to action right there, but just on general correspondence.
The general one, okay. Okay.
And that's going to be more more effective and more relevant when you're communicating with clients.
Mm-hmm.
But just something to keep in mind, whether you do it now or in the future, is just adding an automatic PS as part of your signature or altering your signature to have a vacation notice.
Okay.
Yeah, I would go ahead and send that out now. That's it. That's your basically your prospect follow up will take the form of a vacation notice for January.
Okay. All right. That'll work.
And if it works, the lesson is you should go on vacation every other month.
Yeah, but all my friends tell me I'm always on vacation.
Okay. Yeah, you want work? Go on vacation. I have some coaching clients who do this religiously, and they go on vacation a couple times a year. And if I need work, I need to go on vacation because then automatically I send the vacation email, and you know I always drum up work that way. So it's it's kind of interesting. And the way I like to look at it is it's a nice way to pay for your trip if you're going somewhere.
Right. Yeah, and there was one of the guys I talked to at the show, he had asked me to contact him back after the first of the year about doing some technical writing. And so I did, and he sent me an email back like on Saturday night at like 10 o'clock on Saturday night and just said that he was sorry, but they higher up decided that they were going to keep the project in-house. So I remembered what you said about always responding back and thanking them. So I did. I just sent them a thank you and for letting me know about that. And if they change their mind and the engineer decides it's too much, to keep me in mind.
Great. Yeah. It's the right thing.
We'll see.
Well, good luck.
Okay.
Let us know how it turns out.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. One thing I wanted to mention based on what Robin asked and what Kimberly was asking and sharing here was I do this all the time. I can say this because I'm very guilty of it. You're talking with a couple of prospects, and it's looking really good. Let's say both of them have quite a bit of work, and so you're working both of these prospects. You're following up. And what tends to happen – and you don't mean for it to happen, but you automatically kind of slow down your prospecting and any other type of marketing activity you might be working on because you're thinking, hey, you know, this is going to turn into something, and if it does, I'm going to be really busy. But what could happen is, let's say company A, it gets delayed, and weeks go by, and they still haven't made a decision. Company B ends up just disappearing off the face of the earth. Now you have not done the kind of marketing work that you should have done over the past 5 weeks because you were counting on both of these or at least one of them to come through. So my general advice is, you know, always do more than you think you're going to need to do. If you end up with more work than you can handle, that's a great problem to have. But I'd rather have that problem than to have the other problem. So just always figure on doing more and then worry about the consequences later. I think it's just generally good advice in something again that I'm guilty of and I need to remind myself of quite frequently. All right, guys, so we have an open floor right now. If you have any questions, star 2 raises your hand, star 2 on your telephone keypad, or you can type it in, whatever you prefer. While I'm waiting, wanted to give you a heads up. We have wrapping up an execution plan. We're going to be publishing it on the first of the month here in February on getting your website done. So this is going to be applicable for those of you who are at that place where either haven't gotten your website live yet, or maybe you had something that you created when you first started with and it was a starter website, and you need to take things to a new level and just kind of do a refresh or a revamp. It's going to be applicable to both audiences, something many of you have been asking us for. So just know that's coming here in a couple of weeks. All right. We got Sharon on. Hey, Sharon. It's been a long time.
Hello,
how are you?
Hello, Ed. How you doing?
Doing well. Good to talk to you again.
You too. I have a little bit of a different question. I am going to be attending a very focused 3 days of what's called Leadership Palm Beach, which is put on by a nonprofit that is somewhat exclusive to get into. You have to be recommended, and you're part of a team of people, probably 50 people or so, that are leaders and people who are like moving up in government, but also a lot of nonprofits, but also a lot of big businesses. And a lot of major corporations sponsor these events or sponsor the breaks and the session, the social hour after it. And then they're taking us around to, there's a new ballpark, spring training home for the Washington Nationals that's opening up here, and take you visit these sites and talk to the people who built them and all of the major issues in this county. I know other counties do it. It's called Leadership Tomorrow in some places. This is a short, there's a year-long program that people get involved in that does a lot more visiting of places and meeting key leaders. And the leaders talk about their organization, and like it's starting off at a major museum that was Henry Flagler's house on Palm Beach. And that's being sponsored by like 4 companies, and the companies, people who are alumni of this group, will talk about their organization and the top issues they're following. I am just wondering, in a big group like that, what's the best way? I'm going to be meeting a lot of new people, a lot of it's all business or people who have big budget contacts. What's the best way to network for business at a something like this?
So do you have a way to find out who's going to be at this? You said what you're going to is a 3-day thing.
Right. It's a 3-day. It's tomorrow. Tomorrow is 6 hours, and then there's 2 full days next week that are from 7:30 in the morning till 5:30 in the afternoon.
Oh, this is about to happen. Okay.
And I do know who my colleagues are and who the speakers are. I have all that information. I know the names of the 50 people, and one of them is a former colleague of mine at the electric utility I used to work with, and other names are semi-recognizable, but I haven't met these people.
Okay, well, that's good, but at least you know who's going. It might be a little bit tight with time, but the first thing I would do is I would do some homework on those who are going to be there. You know, and obviously not going to be able to do this kind of deep homework with 50 people, but you could do an initial scan and narrow it down to, let's say, you know, 10 or 20.
Right. I've looked, and one fellow's a vice president at a major publishing company here that hires writers for different things all the time.
Okay.
They're educational publishers. And he's an alumni at my same college, but I've never met him.
Okay. Well, the good news is this. You guys are all – you're in a group. I mean, when you think about the social dynamics of something like this, you guys are all going to be together. You've been – there's certain requirements to be there. You've been chosen, recommended, all this stuff, right? So it wasn't like you bought your way through. And it's also a relatively small group,
right.
which is – fantastic. That increases your chances. We're not talking about 500 people. That makes it hard.
No, it's about 50.
50 is great. So I would do my homework because that, for me, well, first of all, it reduces the anxiety, and it also gives me kind of some cues and some things I could ask about. I already know things about people going into it, which might feel a little stalkish, but I mean, it's really not. I want to know who's going to be in there because I want to be interested in them. And it's easier to do when you know about what they do, who they are, et cetera.
Yeah, I just got the list of the participants in the last few days.
Okay. So that's the first thing I would do, narrow down to, let's say, 20 you think is going to be, you know, going to be the best ones, 10 or 20. And then look them up and do a little bit of research in each. And I would take notes. I mean, like, literally just handwrite, you know, this information and study it. I don't know. For me, that's the way I can retain that information. So when I'm there, not only will I remember names and information better because I've already pre-studied these people, but I think the conversations are going to be more interesting, and I can ask better questions of them when I meet them and all that. But I think the nature of the event really lends itself to people making those connections. So it's not going to be it's going to be easier, I think, to establish those connections when you're there because of the small nature of it and because of the way everyone was kind of picked. So that's one thing, is just know that it's going to be easier than you might think.
Okay.
Second, I think that the you need to practice your elevator pitch, or either the way you talk about what it is you do and whom you work with. And you need to have a couple of different versions. You know, one for somebody who might understand. Maybe they're in the business. You could tell they, you know, like that publisher, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be different from to a person that has never worked with writers, and maybe doesn't even know that people, you know, that writers actually get paid to do some of the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to practice those with someone. I know that, you know, you're about to start tomorrow, but. I would do some role play. Well,
okay.
Because the question's going to come up, and the question's always a variation to this. So what do you do?
You do.
What do you do,
uh-huh.
Sharon?
Right.
And you need to be able that it's got to flow naturally, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And you need to have, again, just think two versions, layman's version and industry insider version. Because
okay. If
you have those two, you can adapt them based on what level of industry inside knowledge they might have.
Right. I'm looking through the list, and there's people from media. There's people from a bank. They're, you know, bank vice presidents, a major partner in a prominent law firm. I mean, they're all leaders in some way of, you know, either nonprofit or educational or business organizations.
Okay.
So I know in most of their organizations, there's going to be a marketing department in many of them. Some of them are individual practitioners like me, but most of them are from big, big organizations.
Okay. Great. So you just, you know, you want to be able to explain what you do in a very natural way without just, like, spewing all this information on them. The way I
right.
like to do this is just one step at a time. Like,
okay.
I will have one sentence that just kind of shocks them. It's like, well, I help these types of companies do this.
Right.
But present it in an interesting way, in a way that just they have to ask me a follow-up question. Oh, wow. So is it like this, or do you do this, or tell me about that? That's what I want. Rather than the typical approach we're all taught, which is deliver these five long sentences all in one breath. You know, I don't like that, and I don't think that's authentic. So I like to chunk it out. One sentence, and again, one for insider people, one for those who are not in the business, and then know how I'm going to proceed based on their follow-up questions.
Okay.
So there's that. There's other things that are just going to be, you know, you'll find your way through it. You know, you always, you know how it is, be interested in the other people. As they're talking to you, find out how you might be able to help them.
Mm-hmm.
Take some notes later, not while they're talking to you. And I think the real magic is in the post-event follow-up that you do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so many people get that wrong. If they even try, it's yucky the way they do it. You know, hey, Jim, that was a great event last week. Hey, wanted to see if we could get together for coffee.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
not.
So,
I would do what I've heard you talk about, which is, you know, send them an article that I see that might be of interest to them, or if it's possible, something like that.
Yeah, and I think maybe that might be the second touch point. Like,
I think
there's room for a, hey, it was great to, what a fantastic event. It was great to meet you. I love what you shared about what you guys are doing with this organization and this initiative. Anyway, here's my contact information. I'd love to stay in touch with you. The reason I like that is it throws them off, because everyone else, and maybe not in this group, but typically in a networking function, everyone else is saying, let's meet for coffee, I want to pick your brain, or do you know anyone in this business, or can I get an appointment with you, can I get into your marketing, you know, your marketing contacts, can you put me in touch with them? It's too premature.
Yeah. Right, right, okay. I hate the pick your brain, it sounds so painful.
Yes. please don't do that. So do the unexpected. The unexpected is, hey, just wanted to say, loved meeting you, love what you have to, you know, what you guys are up to. I'd love to stay in touch. Here's my contact info. You know, no ask, no request, no nothing like that. And you've planted that seed. And then it's, mm-hmm. you know, the second one is maybe 4 or 6 weeks later, you send something. Maybe you think of a way you could help them, you know, maybe a contact you can make, an introduction, some information you think might be helpful. And it's going to be very organic. You're just going to figure it out based on who they are and what they shared with you. And, you know, just like you would in a regular relationship. I think most of us forget, you know, how would we do this if – here's one question I like to ask myself. If I had all the money I needed, I was financially independent, and I was just doing this for fun, like, how would I act?
Okay.
And it's interesting what emerges when you ask yourself that question when it comes to an event like this. How would you act?
Okay.
But we put this pressure on ourselves because I got to get an ROI. I got to get some business from this, you know. And so we start doing silly things.
I'm doing it mainly to, you know more about this county I've been living in for 10 years, where I haven't been here 25 years like I was in Seattle, a member of the media who had all the doors open to me. I did with the first company that I was with, because they were a huge company, one of the sponsors of one of the days of this event, or a couple of the sessions. And but when you're on your own or with a small organization, it's hard to know who all the leaders and shakers are, much less meet them firsthand. So
yeah, I think this is a great opportunity. I can't wait to hear more about it.
And I wouldn't really expect anything immediate, but I think it also lets me go get into their alumni association And they have lunch meetings and various other activities that it might open up for me. I had already taken the names and put them on a Word document.
No, this is a wonderful opportunity. You hit it on the head right there with that last comment, which is think of this as a long game, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're not looking for an opportunity or a gig or a client from this event. You're looking to plant some seeds.
Right.
Just like in any relationship, you're just looking to see who I can help and, you know, who maybe might be able to help me at some point. But the expectation is not what happens now. The expectation is really like, you know, you're looking at year plus.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. I appreciate that. I know it's a little off track, but it's what I'm doing to help build business for the long term.
No, I think it's a great question, not off track at all, because even though this specific event applies to you, I know that others have similar questions about networking events and opportunities. So thank you for asking.
Thanks. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You're welcome. By the way, that reminds me, working on another execution plan, this one we're probably going to be releasing first week of March, and it's on effective networking. I posted something about that on the forum this morning. So if you have any questions about how to network effectively, whether it's a local event, an industry conference, or networking with friends, colleagues locally, or online, social media platforms, et cetera, love to know what your questions might be. We're specifically going to tailor the execution plan for introverts, but it's really going to apply to everybody. It doesn't matter if you're an introvert, extrovert, ambivert, which is more like me, I'm somewhere in the middle. The principles are going to apply. We're gearing it towards introverts because that's going to be the group that I think is going to have the most questions and that tends to resist networking more than the extroverts that actually seek it, everything else being equal. So, yeah, let me know what questions you would want. We're going to have a guest instructor. What questions you would want to ask her? So I make sure to include those in the lessons. And I have a thread for that in the Academy forum. So, all right, so again, star two. If you have a question, that will raise your hand. Star two, last call. Just want to make sure I don't miss anybody. All right, I don't see any other questions, guys, so we'll go ahead and wrap it up. As usual, we'll have the replay posted by tomorrow. We'll send out an email when that's up there, so if you missed any of it, you want to go back, we'll have it in. Within a couple of days, we'll also have a summary of the questions that were asked during the call, and I'll be timestamped. So if you want to just skip ahead to the question about, you know, networking, you'll know exactly where to go to in the recording. So we'll have that ready for you as well in the next couple of days. Thanks again, guys. Great call. And hope you have a great rest of the day. We'll talk again real soon. Take care, everyone.